Neil?
Yep.
Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? All right, everybody. Welcome to this week's show. Neil, how's it going this week, man?
You know, since our last episode, I've actually had a pretty good week, man. I got, over the course of the past few days, I got an official offer letter from that job. I'll be starting on Monday. Flying out to the Midwest.
Nice, dude.
And then some of our listeners may remember that I didn't pass a certification test back in October, but I retook that on Saturday and got it. Was not expecting to when I pressed the submit button. Like, the CAPM exam is a bitch. And the materials that PMI sells to help you pass their test do not... There are a lot of phrases and keywords on the test that are not in, like, the several hundred dollars worth of test prep material that I bought. So... But it's done.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome, dude. I've definitely had job applications like that before, where I got the job, and I was like, really? Like, I was, because I don't know any of this shit. So definitely, it's always surprising, but good.
The job application I felt I was qualified for, there was the certification test.
Right.
That I wasn't unrelated.
Yeah. Just. All right, so everything's coming up, Neil, and you got the holidays right around the corner here, so that'll be good. And actually, it's about to get even better than you, because sometime this month I'm taking you out to, like, really expensive sushi.
Yeah, I was going to mention, once I get to Monday and I see, like, the actual work schedule, I know I've got a couple weeks working virtually from home, just getting the...
Right, yeah.
Stuff under wraps. So once I've got that, I'll let you know when I'll be in the Twin Cities and we can.
Yeah, let me know. Grace can take us to the train station and pick us up, pick our sake bombed drunk asses up from the train station. It'll be fun. All right. Well, everything's coming up, Neil. So special guest today, Paul. What's going on in your life, man?
Not too much, ma'am. Just looking forward to the holidays. It's that time of the year at my job where pretty much everybody's already checked out. So, you know, just kind of spending the days chilling out. It's been good.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is in my job right now. Everybody's just kind of biding their time until... everybody's gone for the better part of a couple of weeks. So, and I just started a new job as well. So I'm just, like, kind of doing my training, and it's been very easy. Nobody really, I worked from home today and played Hades for like 4 hours. So, nice. it was pretty sweet. Good. Let's see here. And then, Gideon, aside from playing Ark Raiders and Platinum and Ghost of Tsushima and, getting that really weird Thanos emote in Fortnite, how have things been going?
Yeah, it's been going good. I watched one other movie besides this. I rewatched The Place Beyond the Pines, which I haven't seen since maybe like 2013, 2014, so that was nice to revisit. Definitely like it. I feel like I like it a little bit less than I did before, but still enjoyed that. And then I've been watching that Welcome to Derry show on HBO, which I've been really liking. And I have one episode left of The Chair Company. So I'm going to finish that up after the podcast. Yeah.
And Welcome to Derry is a spinoff of, isn't it a spinoff of something?
It's like a prequel to the It 1 and 2 movies.
Right. Okay, got it. That's,
yeah. I forget exactly when it takes place. I think it's like the 50s, but I could be wrong. But it's really cool. It, like, you know, like Dick Halloran from The Shining is in it. So there's like that connection, and obviously the It movies. And I think it's done by the same director of the It movies. And I've really enjoyed it so far. So yeah. And the Chair Company has been hilarious and super fun. So I've been liking that a lot.
Awesome. So are you watching Jeff Keighley's Game Awards tomorrow night?
I probably won't be able to tomorrow. At least not right while it's going on. My parents are out of town, and so I gotta like, we're supposed to have snow, so I gotta go like shovel their driveway and stuff. So
Oh,
that'll be
hell yeah.
fun.
Yeah, nothing gets my heart beating like shoveling wet snow. It's like one of the most exerting things that you can do.
I heard you can have a heart attack just like from your
I think a
movement
lot of like
you do.
yeah, I mean I think it would be pretty unusual for like a young, relatively healthy person to have a heart attack, but I was just a lot of like fat Midwestern beer drinker dads that are doing it and then get a little over their skis and you don't feel it because it's cold outside. It's like, you sweat when you swim, but you don't feel it obviously because you're in the water. It's kind of like that.
Right.
Well, let's see what's new with me this week. So I started my new job. That's been good, but it's mostly just been training and stuff. So just living on Easy Street right now. Terrible news. My bagel shop shut down in downtown Minneapolis, so I have to now source my breakfast from another establishment. So that's a bit of a pain in the ass. Let's see. My motorcycle isn't here yet. I don't have an arrival date on that. I don't know how much you guys know about audio and headphones and stuff, but I ordered like this set of earbuds, like a wired set of earbuds, for using on the bus from like a really niche Chinese audiophile kind of company. And they weren't expensive headphones at all. They were like $30, but they don't have a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack on them. They have a 4.4 millimeter headphone jack, which I have never heard of in my life. I don't know if any of you guys have ever heard of that.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
I mean,
I didn't
it
realize
looks
they still made
identical.
headphone jacks.
I mean, it not sorry, not the jack, but the plug. Like the male end of it is a 4.4 millimeter, and I had no idea that such a thing even existed until I pulled these things out of the box and tried to plug them into my PlayStation Vita, and they would not fit. So I have to
That's
go
crazy.
find an adapter now, which of course is not a commonly used adapter, so I have to wait like 2 weeks to get it on Amazon. So anyway,
Wow.
that's neither here or there. We are here this week to talk about one of my all-time favorite movies, and I think what most people would consider one of the best movies of the 70s, Marty Scorsese's Taxi Driver. So initially I kind of wanted to do a De Niro December after Starless or Stardust and Nick Cage November. I'm kind of leaning away from that now because I want people to be able to just like pick whatever they want again. But it seemed like maybe a good transition and a good opportunity to do it because Neil and Gideon had not seen it before. And obviously I'm really, really passionate about this movie. And Paul is also really passionate, so he wanted to come on and do Taxi Driver.
Yes.
So let me give you like just because I'm already here, let me tell you a little bit about my history with it. And then I'll go to you, Paul, and then we'll talk to the two newbies about kind of like what they knew about it going into it. So of course I think everybody kind of colloquially knows about this movie a little bit, or at least you know the phrase, "Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me?" It's like one of the most iconic phrases of that era. Or you're familiar with some of the symbology, like Travis with the shaved head and the mohawk, or you're familiar with some of the individual elements of it like that, or you know who Marty Scorsese is, right? I mean, this is the movie that really put him on the map. So I was kind of familiar by that degree, and then it was like 2, 3, or 4 years ago during COVID when I watched it by myself for the first time, and I just thought it was like totally phenomenal. I was like enraptured from the from the get-go. I was really struck by, sometimes there is a legendary movie and you go to watch it and it's kind of like aged and you're kind of let down by the expectation. And in my mind, like Taxi Driver totally held up, and kind of started my love affair with Scorsese, certainly. So, Paul, what about you? When did you first hear about it? When did you first watch it? That kind of thing.
When I first heard about it, that's something I can't really remember just because it's so culturally significant. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember I think in Hey Arnold, the cartoon, there's references to this movie. So when I first heard about it, maybe I was like five. The first time I really watched it all the way through, I would have been in my teens, maybe early 20s. I connect with it. The way that I connect with it, I think, is a little bit different, not because it's like a literally me movie, but a personal thing about this movie with me is the protagonist, Travis Bickle, is the same age and has the same background as my father. It's
your father's 26 years old.
In 1976, he was 26 years old, and he was recently discharged from the Vietnam War.
Wow.
And I think that, you know, my dad didn't go to college. And so for, I think for him and a lot of the people, you know, his age in that time, the military is kind of where they grew and became the men that they are. Whereas like for us, it was when we were in college together or something like that. And so I don't know, like watching this movie kind of, I think it's, it immerses you into the world of what that may have been like for that generation. I don't want to get too into it when we're just starting the podcast, but I found it very immersive, especially considering like my father's background and where he comes from. It in a way, this is, maybe sounds kind of stupid, but I feel like it helps me kind of connect with him in a certain way. He always felt it was very important for me to kind of, you know, like I've had an authentic M65 battle jacket since I was in like high school. and that's what Travis wears.
So really your dad considered this like the OG literally me movie. Like De Niro was his Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that, right? Like you know, it's like being into like old folk music or stuff. You learn more about your parents because it's their music, but in turn you end up like learning more about yourself because of course you are your parents to a certain degree, right? So yeah, I think that makes sense. And there's a lot of like modern stuff to pull out with this movie, and we'll get into all that. So I'm just going up the list here. Neil, what was your first exposure to this? I mean, you'd obviously heard of it, but you know.
Yeah, you know, it's a movie that's definitely permeated pop culture for the past, you know, 50 years now. I had not seen it. You know, I was familiar with a couple of the like iconic scenes of him like shaving his head, him doing the "Be Talking to Me" scene, but you know, you know, we're not even close to getting to ratings. I don't think that I was in like the right headspace to watch this. You know, I was, like I said, I had a pretty good week. I was feeling really good. I had a good breakfast. I had a good sleep. and then I've got to watch this like dark, dirty, grungy, depressing male loneliness, mental health parade. And I was just, I didn't need this downer today, man. But you know, it's a beautifully shot movie. You know, it really, as far as you can make 1970s New York beautiful, because it is absolutely disgusting.
It is the swath of humanity.
Yeah. So you know, you definitely identify with Travis early on when he's talking about like, thank God the rain came last night and washed all the trash and shit into the gutters.
Yeah.
Okay. I can talk to you for a bit, Travis, but you know.
So you were like Palantine in the back of the cab when you're like, "What's one thing you would fix?" And he's like, "I'd fucking clean up all these goddamn dirty fucking streets and get all the trash." And Palantine is like, "Okay." a little freaked out a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I could definitely understand the like. I didn't watch this at the right time. My argument would be like, who wakes up in the morning and is like, man, this would be a great day to watch Taxi Driver. This would be a great day to watch this 13-year-old prostitute and watch somebody get their hand blown off.
Well, apparently that's you, because for our viewers, Sam posted at like 9 o'clock this morning. Okay, guys, I'll be ready for tonight. I'm about halfway through. Like, you're watching freaking Taxi Driver at like 10 o'clock your time.
That's a very Travis Bickle thing to do.
Well, you know, I'm related to Travis in, you know, maybe more than a few ways in this movie. But
was your breakfast like cereal with extra sugar and booze, like mixed it together and bread? Like Travis.
Yeah, he does not eat particularly well in this movie. But again, you know, as somebody who has, you know, I've never been as far gone as Travis has, but you know, for sure has had bouts of like major loneliness and like just wanting any sort of dopamine hit. I mean, like when I was at South Point and I was like really depressed, my one of my old jobs, I remember just like living off of Diet Cokes and peanut M&Ms, and I was like the fattest I'd ever been, and just it was just like a not good situation. So I totally get the junk food thing. Gideon, how about you? Sort of like, when did you hear about it and what did you know about it going in?
So I mean, I've heard of this movie for years and years. I thankfully didn't really get much of it spoiled. I guess I didn't fully realize till watching it that you know, you talking to me line is from this, which, you know, I've heard for decades at this point. And you know, I'd watch like a lot of just YouTube videos about movies and film and stuff, and so obviously this was always brought up. I just never got around to it. And obviously, you know, I've seen a handful of Scorsese's other movies. You know, sometimes he's kind of hit and miss, but I always appreciate what he brings to the table, and I think he does really interesting movies, and he has like a wide range and catalog of different styles and stuff. And so yeah, I was really excited to check it out, and yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I was excited to dig more into it with you guys.
Yeah, guys, so let's kind of do our initial 10,000 foot thoughts before we get into things deeper. I you know, obviously I love this movie. I think it's like one of the best first person character studies where you kind of see his like descent into madness. It's a really good look into the eyes of somebody who, you know, is not so different than you know, any of us at certain points in our lives, and they just take it way too far. There's a lot of like Catholic guilt in this movie, and redemption, and it's violent, and it's well written, and it's quick, and De Niro's performance is obviously so good. Everybody's good in this movie. I think Jodie Foster is really good in this movie. Harvey Keitel is really good in this movie. And I find that it's very good at suggesting things to you with the camera work rather than just having to explicitly tell you. Like when Travis meets Iris for the first time out on the street, she like tries to jump in the cab, right, and run away with him. And you're not entirely sure what's going on. You know, it's like the whole movie is seedy. So it's hard to say that like this is a particularly seedy part of Manhattan. And you think you know what's going on, but I think your brain as a decent person wants to think like, nah, there's no way she's like a prostitute. Like that's, you know, she's like 13. There's no way that's what's going on here. And she gets pulled away by Sport, Harvey Keitel. And there's a big neon sign in the background of the scene that says "for rent," right? Which is supposed to apply to the building, but also is like subconsciously telling us like what the situation is with Jodie Foster. There's shit like that all over this movie. And like another one that really stands out to me is that we never get a scene where Travis is just like, wow, I really hate black people, right? I'm racist, right? Like we don't get it that blunt, but we get a lot of suggestion that that's how Travis feels because of the way that the camera is used, or like like it'll be a close up on De Niro and then a close up on somebody nearby that he doesn't quite trust. Just like a lot of really good subtle shit going on in this movie. Sounds great, looks great. That scene where he's like listening to the Jackson Brown song in his apartment is like the best scene that I've watched recently since the end of The Wrestler. So obviously I'm all over this movie like stink on shit. Let's do Neil to get some contrast, and then we'll go to Paul, and then we'll go to Gideon.
Okay, so few thoughts. Number one, like at first I thought that this movie was like early male loneliness, and I think there's an element of that involved, but I think that there's something more fundamentally wrong with Travis, even at the beginning, than just like being lonely and probably having PTSD from his time in Vietnam. I really found myself comparing him to Patrick Bateman from American Psycho, where, which I really want to bring to the podcast at some point. But there's a scene in American Psycho where Patrick Bateman is sitting in the back of like a cab or a limo, like he's being driven around, and his fiance is saying something that's like not interesting to him, so, and he's like listening to music, and
she
like snaps at him, like, you know, why are you listening to that when I'm talking music? Because I want to fit in. And you know, I think there's a lot of instances where we get a lot of internal monologue from Travis, where he's like either writing in a journal and we're hearing his thoughts as he writes, where he's like talking how humans ought to be, or how, and like he just doesn't quite seem to get a couple of things about just like regular human interaction. Particularly the first like third of the movie, I would say, is focused on his relationship with this presidential campaign volunteer, Betsy, I think is her name.
Yeah.
And you know, he approaches her in a way that's like, because we know who Travis is already a little bit, is probably a little disconcerting, but like if you didn't know who he was, might make him seem like dynamic and interesting, but we already know that he's kind of a creep. And then, you know, they're dating for a while and it seems like it's going well. It's like, oh, good for Travis. You know, he's making this work. And then he takes her to a porno theater at like 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And
so to interrupt, Neil and Gideon, did you guys know about the porno theater stuff before you watched the movie?
I did not.
I mean, I knew that like New York was like Broadway used to be just.
Yeah. Times Square was all porno.
Yeah. And yeah, so like, you know, it got cleaned up in like the late 80s and 90s to the point where it's like, oh, Broadway, it's fabulous. And so, but yeah, you still just used to be sex shops and porno.
I only asked because that Grace watched the entire movie with me, but she had to step out for the cringe of watching Travis take Betsy to the porno and then calling her on the phone afterwards. Like I've maybe watched like two or three times in the house, like while I've been with Grace, and she can never ever watch that stuff between Travis and Betsy. So anyway, sorry, continue.
No, but like, so she gets upset with him, and he clearly doesn't quite understand why. Like throughout the movie, he says a variation of like, "Well, I don't really follow other movies. I don't really follow." Like he's so disconnected in like, mm-hmm. I'm gonna label it as like kind of autistic, where you know, he's just so disconnected beyond where I think like PTSD and just being generally lonely apply. I think there's something going on with him that's been going on his whole life, and it's not just like this movie's documenting his like psychotic break. He's been disconnected for most of his life. So you know, the literally me comments are just I don't identify with Travis in the same way that I identify with Ryan Gosling in Drive, and I'm happy to say that for myself.
Now are you telling me you've never? Because like I'm being honest about the literally me stuff in that like I've definitely had that moment on a date with a girl where I'm like everything's going fine and then I say something stupid. I watch the whole thing. Like, I watch her expression change in a way that's like, I'm never going to see this person again. I've done that before. So.
Look, I think we can. I was actually going to ask, and if the way that you started off the podcast, it didn't really open. I was going to ask, what's everybody's like worst date experience? But like the difference is like, you can make a genuine mistake, and you know, screw up a relationship, but I don't think anybody here would be like so out of it as to suggest, you know, taking a girl on your like third or fourth date to a porno theater. You know, Sam, maybe I'm giving you too much credit here, but you know, you're successfully married, so you either Grace is into some stuff that I'm not familiar with, or you know, you successfully navigated that particular landmine.
Grace to a porno. It really weirded me out, and it made me think that Grace was a fed. That like when we were on our first couple of dates, she seemed totally genuinely into me. That was like very strange for me, and she wasn't like running away screaming. Like that just seemed very novel to me at that particular time. So maybe I'm probably not the right person to ask, but I don't know. I certainly relate to Travis in some not so flattering ways, short of taking a girl to a porno and you know, shooting somebody's fucking hands off. So so let's say Paul here. We got four people, so we got to speed things up a little bit. Paul, 10,000 foot thoughts. I mean, you obviously have a great deal of affection for this movie.
Yeah, I definitely don't know if I can relate to Travis in that I've never taken a woman to a porno theater, but that's obviously one of the biggest blunders that Travis commits in the movie, especially because preceding that he approaches Cybill Shepherd in such a like strong way, and he takes her to coffee and he spits mad game at her, and you think he has this under, like, he really, you know, like takes her in with his monologue when they're having pie and coffee together about how like I'm a lonely lost person and I think you are too, and he's really able to level with her. And then it's like, how do you follow that with take her to a porno theater? I think the one of the saddest parts of this movie for me personally was right after that, when he's because he gives her a vinyl record as a gift that she had said he had reminded her of, and he's like, "Oh, just take it," and she goes, "I already have it." I feel like that would seem inconsequential to most people, but for me personally, there is like nothing more heartbreaking than realizing that a girl was just being nice to you. Before that, when he gives her the record and she acts like, "Oh, this is, oh, thank you so much, great gift, I'm so excited for this date," and then at the end of that, she's mad at him, she's running away, and he's like, "Well, just take the record," and she says, "I already have it." That hit me really hard. Maybe that's weird, but I don't know. I think that
no, I agree. Well, even to add insult to injury, then she says, she's like, "Oh, great, then I'll have two." Like, it's an annoyance. It's like, oh, yeah. God.
I think the first most heartbreaking part of that's the second most heartbreaking part of the movie for me personally. The first most heartbreaking part of the movie was he's trying to talk this young woman into getting herself out of this terrible, terrible, like, exploitative situation with this objectively shitty guy. And she says, "Oh, well, we're both Pisces, so, you know, we're bonded together. And you probably don't understand because you're a Sagittarius." That was also just like, I feel that hard. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's the very, very painful stuff happening in this movie. Yeah. Before we get too much further into it, Gideon, 10,000 foot thoughts, man.
Yeah, I really enjoyed just how it was shot, the colors, seeing 70s New York, how gritty and grimy it is. Obviously, I've mentioned in the past, like, sometimes, like, a character can like rub me the wrong way, and it's almost like it can throw my whole experience off with the movie. But to counter that, I will say, like, I do really enjoy movies about, like, not necessarily like a seedy character, but like just a darker character, and like seeing what's going on in their life and how things are the way they are in their world. Similar to, obviously, I talked about this movie a couple times, but Good Time, which is similar in that way, with the character being kind of a piece of shit, but he kind of wants to do one thing good. And that's kind of similar with this movie, but I'm sure this, you know, movie influenced like 1,000 movies. So I thought, you know, amazing acting, amazing cinematography, beautiful colors. I could totally see why it was so lauded. I really enjoyed it. I didn't really find too many faults or anything I didn't really like with it. I'm still kind of trying to figure out where I land on it score-wise, but I really, really enjoyed it, and I was glad to finally see it.
Were either of you, Neil or Gideon, were either of you surprised with the level of violence, specifically in like the last 10 minutes?
No, that was one of the things, well, I guess a little bit. I had heard about kind of the eruption and explosion of violence towards the end, but I kind of in my head always thought for some reason it's like he went on a killing spree in or near his own like apartment. So I didn't really realize like that was totally off base and it was something else. But yeah, and one of the things I wanted to mention, kind of piggyback off what Neil had said about, you know, his like dissociation and disconnect of like, it's like when he goes to the porno theater by himself, and this for me was one of the most depressing parts, where he's like, oh, let me get a Clark bar, let me get this candy and this other thing and a Coke and a popcorn, and she's like, that'll be $1.85.
And especially in New York City, I mean, like,
yeah, exactly. I was like, I'm gonna kill myself, that's so depressing. But I mean, I'm joking obviously, but with like that, it's like to him he's like so dissociated and disconnected, it's like it is going to the movies and he is like sitting down with his concessions to watch this movie, but it's a porno, you know, but he's watching it like it's a, you know, Star Wars or something. And obviously all the stuff with Jodie Foster is very bleak, and it does make me wonder about, you know, the parents write the letter thanking him and everything, and he's, you know, kind of paraded like he's a bit of a hero, but there's that bubbling like tension underneath like throughout that, like Neil talked about too. And just how he, you know, the eruption of violence. I'm kind of losing my train of thought, but yeah, I don't know. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm excited to revisit it in the future.
So, this is just going to be a quick fire question to Neil. Neil, what is worse, taking a girl to a porno on a date or taking every girl to see Annie Hall on your first date?
Which porno, Sam?
Yeah. Look,
let's assume it was that weird European one that they were watching.
Look, I'm still gonna say that taking a girl, like, you know, maybe there's a girl out there that this works for, but I'm just saying, taking a girl to a porno theater is worse than every girl having to watch Annie Hall on your first date.
Okay. Just I asked that for no particular reason. Okay. So here's my kind of question of the night to the whole group: Is Taxi Driver the best Literally Me movie?
It definitely pioneers the genre and it deserves respect. It might be the best.
Because I think 2049's up there. I think Le Samurai came out before Taxi Driver.
I've not seen Le Samurai.
Le Samurai is French, and like, I don't think you're supposed to think that Alain Delon is like a creep in that movie. He's just like fucking awesome. So it's a little bit more of a like aspirational, literally me kind of a movie. So I, for me personally, it's, I love Drive so much. Oh, by the way, yeah. Albert Brooks in this movie, he's the guy who works with Cybill Shepherd in political office. He's kind of like got the Jufro. That is, Albert Brooks is also the villain in the very end of Drive that kills Bryan Cranston.
I had no idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's also the voice of Marlin in Finding Nemo.
Dude, that's awesome.
I think I've mentioned this before, but if I was better at like video and audio editing, I want to like take clips of Finding Nemo and Finding Dory and then redub them with lines from Drive where he's just like cussing people out, just like Marlin just verbally abusing Dory to
Oh, that's awesome.
That's good shit, dude. Other nominees for the best literally me movie, Neil or Gideon?
Still Drive for me.
I mean, yeah. Love Drive. Love Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, 2049. Any Ryan Gosling movie from the last 10 years.
If it's not Taxi Driver, it's 2049. I'll say that. I don't know if I might say it's Taxi Driver, though.
I feel more connected in the literal sense of literally me with something like 2049 compared to Taxi Driver, because I, you know, like you mentioned, I definitely connect with sometimes that like dissociative or just like depressed, isolated feeling of it, but not everything that like Travis is going through or dealing with. And I'm sure there's plenty of people that would watch this and be like, what the fuck, like what a creep or whatever.
Yes, some fucking Protestant is gonna watch this movie and be like, this isn't me at all, I don't understand what this movie is about at all.
Right.
My life is great and I'm blonde and beautiful and everything is wonderful.
Ned Flanders, like, golly.
this guy sure is going through a hard time.
The thing about it for me is, like, Blade Runner 2049, I know it takes place in 2049, which is technically closer to where we are than 1976. But it's a futuristic world that doesn't exist that I've never lived in. But I've been to New York City, and I feel like, you know, like I think we've all seen like some of the grittiness of I think we've all been to New York, maybe we haven't, but I feel like I've lived in Taxi Driver personally more than I could have ever lived in this, you know, cyberpunk futuristic world, as much as I would like to. I love 2049, it's one of my favorite movies, but I wouldn't pretend like I've ever lived in that world. Taxi Driver is probably more like familiar to my personal experience, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think there's it's more grounded.
Yeah,
for sure. And it's more I don't know. I like can I say I like Taxi Driver more because it's shorter? Is that an acceptable
That's
answer?
A very Sam thing to say.
I love 2049 though. I
love it too. It's just so long.
Yeah.
Need an intermission.
It's like, now. God damn, how long are we gonna walk down this fucking hallway, Ryan Gosling? Like, let's give it a break, dude. All right, what else is good about this movie? I think the Travis Bickle has a very strong jacket game.
Yeah.
Yes. Cool guy jacket.
Oh, you gotta talk about the traveling salesman, dude.
Oh my, I love this scene.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he unfolds the briefcases and he's like, look at this beautiful little gun right here. Now that's a beauty, isn't it? Those little 44 magnum, that'll put a hole through an elephant right there. I just there's something I love about that particular character. Another good one is Marty Scorsese's cameo in the movie.
Yeah.
Yes. it's interesting that you bring both of those scenes up at the same time, because the thing that I picked up on, maybe you guys picked up on it too, but he picks up Martin Scorsese. Martin Scorsese's telling him, you ever seen what a 44 Magnum does to a girl's pussy? You're gonna. And you think like, wow, for once, you know, Travis is not the most psycho person in a scene. And then in like two scenes later, Psycho Travis is asking the gun dealer, hey, do you have a 44 Magnum? Can I see one of those? You know, it makes it kind of changes the context of that scene that took place when he picks up Martin Scorsese in the cab. And instead of like Travis listening to this psycho who's like rambling about how he's going to like shoot off his girlfriend's pussy with a Magnum, it's like, okay, instead of Travis just like being concerned and weirded out by this, he's learning from it by somebody who's crazier than he is. And he's bringing that with him into the scene where he buys the guns from the dealer.
Yeah.
Right. There's several scenes in the movie. There's a bunch of scenes in the movie that, so I don't know if you guys know this, but Scorsese spent a year in the seminary training to become a priest. And then he jumped ship to channel his passions into film. And there's all sorts of like scenes in this movie where it's shot from above and there's like a bunch of items on a rectangular kind of rectangular platter, and Scorsese said it was supposed to be like the instruments of the mass on the altar, and the gun scene is definitely one of those scenes where you see everything like laid out, and the very end of the movie is like that, where you see the room from above and all the dead bodies laying there. Some really heavy, crazy religious shit going on in this movie, which is I think another reason why I like have such a strong personal thing with Scorsese. Like our end of the year wrap up for me, like I know we're excluding Taxi Driver because we already kind of like marked it as a classic, and I don't want to like just put a movie I've already seen a bunch of times at the top of my list, but like Last Temptation of Christ is going to be like near or at the top of my list. I don't know, I just think he's so good at this one particular thing. Jesus, what else was I going to ask about this movie? Favorite scenes that stood out to people? Favorite moments? What do you got, Paul?
Well, my favorite scene in the whole movie was the scene where he walks into the bodega and it's getting robbed, and then he shoots the criminal, and then he and the owner of the bodega, I feel like he had a greater connection to the owner of that bodega than he does anybody else in the movie, because immediately they're on the same level. They're like, are you hurt, no, shit, what do I do, don't worry man, get out of here, I've handled this plenty of times, it's fine, you know, do you need any money, no, I don't need any money, just it's fine, it's okay. Like they were immediately on the same wavelength, and I think there is like a connection in that scene that stands out to me compared to any other connection that Travis has in that movie. The bodega owner and Travis have this shared hatred for the scum of New York. And you don't even know who the bodega owner is, but that's immediately apparent just by that minute and a half scene that takes place. I love that scene. That's that's my favorite.
Yeah, he even gives the store owner the letter so he can like say, oh, I shot him. You know, it was my gun.
Oh, wow.
Or he just like leaves it with him.
I guess I didn't realize that. And also, it's like, they're both, like, so sick of it, right?
Yeah. Because
the store owner's like, this is, like, the third time in 4 months or whatever he says, you know?
Have you ever had that kind of a connection with somebody? Like a stranger at a grocery store or something where, like, you both just, like, empathize with each other over, I don't know, over some dumb shit? I don't know. I love that feeling. I don't know.
I know what you mean. Just like a random moment of connection out there with a stranger. It's a very like male thing, I think, to have happen. Like the one that comes to mind is me working my first job, and it was an IT job, and the company bought another company. We inherited all their IT guys, and one of them was exactly like comic book Kevin Simpsons, and just would not shut the fuck up about stupid bullshit all day. It would like. He was super annoying and just talked all the time. So I started bringing in like noise canceling headphones, and I was sitting next to this Japanese guy named Masa, who like I worked with. He was a temp, and a few days after I started doing that, I looked over and Masa had started bringing his own noise canceling earbuds, and we both just gave each other this knowing look of what exactly had transpired there. Like, and he gave me this like approving nod, this silent like good idea. Kind of
the immediate mutual understanding.
Yeah, so that's all I got. Neil, I haven't heard from you in a bit. How about you for favorite scenes, favorite moments, anything like that?
I will say that I enjoyed Harvey Keitel in this. I wasn't expecting him to be who he was. I don't know if his face is visible in the first scene where he's like trying to drag Jodie Foster out of the cab.
Mm-hmm.
If it is, like, I wasn't focused on that. But then, like, seeing him in his like blue like marching band overalls and pimp hat and just like sizing Travis up when Travis is like trying to infiltrate the prostitution ring. Like, he's obviously a gross character, but he's also like, it's fun to see how skeezy he is almost. I also agree that the I love guns, like illegal gun sales. I've got two scenes from Breaking Bad in my YouTube playlist, and Easy Andy might make his way in there as well. Apparently, when he's listing off things after the gun, that was all ad-libbed by the actor.
Oh my God, yeah, he's wow. Mescaline, perfumine, uppers, downers, that guy. Killer little. That's actually Scorsese joint though, right? Like having like one weird cameo that like steals the show for the whole.
I'm looking at this actor's IMDb, and he's got 6 acting credits between 1975 and 2009.
Wow.
And this was actually his first major role. In like the previous one was a. Like back on Canon Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else that I kind of want to pull at with this one. I mean, anything else you guys want to work? We got about 10 minutes left on the show, so anything else you guys want to bring up?
I did have a question about one scene.
Yeah.
Just real quick, because I wasn't totally sure what it meant. But so when he's at the political rally, and what's the guy's name? Palantine, is that it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When he like is going up and he's doing his speech, and Travis like he's about to make a move, like he's gonna shoot him. Like, I guess I didn't totally understand why he would want to do that. Aside from, is it maybe like because he feels like scorned by that Betsy girl, so he kind of wants to like almost like get back at her in that way? Like, what did that mean to you guys for that scene?
Can I jump in?
Because
my question is, at the end of the, and I think that seems important to the question. At the end of the day, is Travis Bickle a good guy?
No, because I think good guy is often defined by intention rather than action. Like, yeah, he killed a bunch of scumbags in the movie. But like Palantine isn't a scumbag, and he was going to try to kill him. It, you know, we don't see him as a bad guy because he didn't succeed in killing Palantine. We would view him much differently if he would have, right? I don't think Travis is motivated by like I'm doing this for justice, right? Like the commonly, I don't want to say accepted because I'm not saying that this is like the correct interpretation, but like a very common interpretation of the movie is that. Travis is killing the men that he perceives to have power over the women that he desires, right? Like he's the power figure is Palantine, or the power figure is sport, you know, Harvey Keitel, something like that. I'm not smart enough to know exactly what was meant by that in the movie, but you know, I think that's like a pretty valid interpretation. I don't think he's really that good of a guy, and I don't think that Cybill Shepherd was really in the cab at the end of the movie. Did anybody else have that read? Like that seemed like a total dream sequence to me.
Oh,
I've heard that theory before.
I thought it was a dream thing as well, but then like you do see her getting out. But yeah, maybe that's just all in his head. I was thinking it was a dream sequence.
Okay.
And regarding him being a good or bad guy, you know, when I glanced at the Wikipedia article. It said something like he was the top 30 like all-time villains in movies or whatever. But I feel like on my watch, I never really considered him a villain character. Like I felt he was just more like troubled and frustrated And it's like not knowing where or how to like displace that anger and frustration he has, whether it's like, he got dumped and then, yeah, he wants to kill Palantine because he's admired by her, and he feels like scorned by her. But then also with like Jodie Foster, it's like he seems like he wants to do the right thing in his eyes and like help somebody that he thinks he can, even if it's by such like extreme means and violence.
Yeah, Neil, what was your interpretation of that? I mean,
Yeah, no, I think I agree in that. I think he's just lashing out at the visible face of Cybill Shepherd leaving him. And I think that scene also is defining in that, his original plan was to leave $500 to Jodie Foster for her to go and join a commune in Maine or something. He leaves like the suicide note that never gets opened or read because he doesn't actually kill Palantine. Like him going to kill Harvey Keitel and the other mobsters is like his backup plan. So yeah, I don't think that he's a good guy. Even if he did something good, it was like not his like even overall intention to do so. That was his backup, like suicide by cop plan.
Yeah, I think he kind of lucked into being like I believe that the parents of Jodie Foster wrote him that nice letter or whatever, but I don't think that the like the false modesty with the Cybill Shepherd, it's God, this is embarrassing. It's too That scene is too close to the like me taking a shower and thinking about like, oh, if I could do this all over again, this is how exact this is like the perfect version of how this scene would play out. Like that scene at the very end is way too close to like, fantasies I've had to be real. At least that's how I read it. It was just so perfectly like the false modesty, and then she tries to pay at the end, and you're just like fucking cool as a cucumber, and you don't spill spaghetti out of your pockets. You just look like a Giga Chad, and you don't move to Minnesota anyway.
Jesus.
Right, getting a little too real here. So, well, let's get some scores. Oh yeah, getting.
Just one last quick thing I wanted to mention that I thought was interesting. It's like Travis almost seems like he's doing what he perceives as good, as in like saving Jodie Foster at the end and everything. And he gets that letter, and like in the and newspapers, almost like touted as a hero. But even like Jodie Foster herself says like she doesn't want to go back there to her parents, and it's like we don't know why she ran away. It's like, for all we know, she could be being abused by her parents, and maybe that's why, they could be happy to have her back for that reason, and that could be just totally grasping at straws, but it did make me kind of wonder. It's like, oh, maybe in the parents' perspective, it's not just good because their kid's back, but for other, like, more sinister reasons too. And maybe she just ran away because, sometimes kids just want to get away from their parents or whatever, but so I just thought that was kind of interesting, and I love it when stuff like that isn't like totally explained and it's open to interpretation like that.
Yeah, do you guys want to maybe we're just past the hour mark here. Do you guys want to give some scores? I think it's pretty settled where maybe Paul and I are at on this, but I'm comfortable giving this a 5-star movie. That's not a, obviously not going to be a surprise to anybody. It's just it's the kind of it's great to watch just as an entertaining, well-paced, well-written, executed movie, but it's also got that additional thing for me, which is like the Scorsese has a lot of himself in here, and it's the artist telling you, hey, here's all the evil shit that goes on in my head, here's all the th things that are wrong with me, and there's a certain amount of confession to that I really really respect artistically. So this is like right in my wheelhouse, the kind of thing that I really like. How about you, Paul?
Same. I would also give it a 5 out of 5. It's a classic for a reason. I think it, you know, it's a really, it's one of the pioneering, like, you know, statement on male loneliness, especially for the time where it was, young Vietnam veterans at a very specific time at a very specific place in America. I don't know. It's classic. Like I said, it's a classic for a reason. It's 5 out of 5. I don't know what more there is to say.
Yeah. Gideon, how about you?
Yeah, I'm still kind of figuring out exactly how I feel about it. I'm kind of between a 4 and 5, but I would lean more towards the 5. I totally get why it's a classic and why it's so regarded. I think it's really beautifully shot, beautiful colors, great performances. It feels very, very modern and kind of timeless, especially with things like the pacing and just some of the camera angles and stuff. I really loved, even just kind of getting to see the taxi, like, as a character with the different, you know, the mechanical fare thing and different shots of it, like, in the rain. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I was really happy to see it. I will give it a 5 for now. I don't really see it going down. There wasn't really anything I disliked about the movie. And I just really appreciate that we even have it. You know, it's pretty crazy seeing New York in the 70s like this. And this kind of performance and this movie that's just stood the test of time for so long. So, yeah, I'm glad to cross off the list.
All right, man. Neil, last but not least.
Well, it is going to be least.
Well, that's okay. I figured that. Save the best for last.
I'm gonna land on a 3. I think maybe if I'd been in a different state of mind, I could be convinced to give it a 4. Mm-hmm. So, I'll give it the 4. I think everything you guys said is valid. But you know, we've talked about the difference between a 4 and a 5 in the past, and it just doesn't quite cross that barrier for me. Even with the state of mind I was in watching it and all that stuff, it just doesn't take that final step. So I'm gonna be the contrarian and give it a 4 rather than a 5.
One of the most quoted lines on this whole podcast, I think about it constantly, is like, "Hey, a 5, you got to leave room for Kurosawa," which I believe you said, Neil. That was like, that's a really good way of summarizing like where a 5 is going to be at. Well, I'll be sure to, since you're just giving it a 4 instead of a 5, I don't know if I'm going to be able to hold up on the whole expensive sushi thing, but, you know, we'll see. Maybe we'll
turn the table.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I'll just leave you downtown after. Yeah, you got a new job, right, Neil? It's like you're taking care of this. All right. Well, boys, let's see. Remind me, we do our wrap up in January, right?
Yep.
So I think next week could probably be
one more for Gid.
Yeah, one more for Gideon before the end of the year. That'd be a good one. Good. Don't pick some total shitter.
Well, I wanted to ask if you guys have seen this, because I haven't seen it. And I was thinking about De Niro December. I have two picks, because one's a bit longer, so I can do the shorter one. But have you guys seen Heat from 95?
I've never seen Heat.
Okay, what about you?
I have seen Heat.
Okay. If you guys are down, I'm down. It is 2 hours and 50 minutes. so it's almost 3 hours.
I'll make an exception for De Niro. Let's just put it that way.
We can go out with a bang. The other one, my alternate pick would have been The King of Comedy, which I've never seen but always heard of.
Yeah, it's another Scorsese joint, I think.
I think so, probably. I think he is Michael.
Up to you, man. Yeah, Michael Mann directed Heat.
I'm going to go for Heat because I've heard about it forever. And I know, like, I think GTA 5 like references the big heist.
Yeah.
And I love action movies, and it's like an action movie blind spot for me. So but I think it'd be fun.
I will say that, like, not to give it away, but Heat is worth the nearly 3 hour runtime.
That's what I've heard too. Is so I'm just very curious about it, and you know, the only thing I know is like that one reload sequence Val Kilmer does is like they use it to train the Marines or some shit because he's like so good at it. So
what's the movie where Al Pacino says she's got a great ass?
I think that's.
Is it? I have no idea.
I believe
it is from Heat. Yes. Okay. It is from Heat. Okay. I can't wait. Love Pacino.
Nice. All right. Let's do it.
And then, of course, we got to do Pacino January or something, and then do Jack and Jill for Neil.
What's
Adam
my
Sandler
name?
April. Dunkachino. Okay, let's get here. So, yeah, maybe an Adam Sandler April or something like that. But just send this podcast over the top.
yes, please.
Yeah, when I was like, my favorite movie was Mr. Deeds. So I get it. I've been there before. We've all been 12 years old before. All right, I'll see you guys next week.
See you next week. Have a good one, boys.
Peace, guys.